T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're gonna play on and stand strong with Jolo and Dibs. Turn the game on. Pump up the volume. It's time to play ball. With Jolo and Dibs. Turn the game on.
All right, it is the morning show. Ryan Covey and Joe Shasky sitting in for Joe Fortenbaugh and Dan Dibley, respectively. Then sitting across from me, Lorenzo Neal. We're waiting to be connected with John Morosi. He will join us in just a hot second. A lot of topics on the table this morning. Early, we got into Bud Selig's comments that he made about Barry Bonds. We're still reacting to the Justin Verlander comments about the Juice Baseball and how Major League Baseball owns Rawlings. It's one of those things where I don't know enough about the actual makeup of a Major League Baseball to tell you definitively. I just know that when I watch baseball, balls are flying out of the park at record numbers, and it would seem that it suits baseball's interest. And when you think about the fact that they bought that company, we start to connect the dots. So let's talk about it now with our Major League Baseball insider, John Morosi, who joins us on 95.7 The Game. John, Ryan Covey, Joe Shasky, and Lorenzo Neal. And, of course, he joins us on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls, connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video, messages, and meetings across your existing devices. John, good morning. How are you today?
Ryan, Joe, Lorenzo, I am great. Happy All-Star break to all of you, and best wishes here for the second half. Great to be with you this morning.
All right, general impressions of the All-Star game. Was it an overall success for a showcase of talent in Major League Baseball?
Certainly was, and I'll tell you how I can tell that it was is just chatting with parents here at T-ball games in Michigan. Those that are casual baseball fans said that was so much fun to watch. The conversation between the players, between the managers, that it really added a lot of texture to the game. So I would say on that front, you got to credit Fox, you got to credit the players and MLB as well for putting on a great show that really conveyed, I think, just the tremendous depth of personality that we've got in the game today, and certainly some very poignant moments. The support of the Indians players for their teammate Carlos Carrasco, Tommy La Stella, and Mike Trout wearing Tyler Skaggs at number 45. There were a lot of really authentic and special and meaningful moments there that really, I think, probably drew a tear to the eye of a lot of people watching. So I think it showed a lot of the humanity and a lot of the personality that we've got in the game right now.
So, John, I got to get your feeling on this now that we've had the All-Star break. Has Madison Bumgarner thrown his last pitch for the San Francisco Giants?
Good question. I think right now the answer is no. From what I was told most recently, it was that the offers have not yet gotten to the range where the Giants are expecting them to eventually be. And as a result, he's going to have to go a little bit deeper into the month of July pitching here to see where the interest lines up. I think certainly every time he does pitch at Oracle this month, it's potentially the last time he's going to be doing it. But I think in general, there's an understanding there that he could certainly be moved at any day. But from my understanding right now, based on what sources have told me, it's not yet imminent, not yet close. But I do think I would use the word inevitable to describe a Bumgarner move this month.
Sure. Matt Morosi joining 95.7 The Game here. John, rather. John, it's always great to talk to you. You're my man. My question to you is, Will Smith or Madison Bumgarner, who, in your opinion, has more trade value?
Very good question, Lo. I think for me, the greater value is Bumgarner because he is a starting pitcher. And we know what he can do in the playoffs. I think that for that reason, if you've got a postseason ace, which I still think people look at Bumgarner as being, no matter what the numbers say this year, a player like that always carries more value than a closer. But Will Smith is going to be having, I think, a wide range of interest all around the game. You think, especially as a lefty reliever and someone who can close games as he has for the Giants this year. So I would say that we are not yet at the point where Smith's value is close to Bumgarner's, but they're both really good. And Will has been one of the dominant closers in the game this year. I just think that the reliever who throws one inning or one inning plus is not quite comparable to the potential postseason ace right now. I would say, though, and I wrote about this yesterday at MLB.com, there's a legitimate chance that we see the Dodgers and Giants make a trade.
Wow.
And I know that's surprising on some level. They haven't done it since 2007. And, in fact, before that, they hadn't done it since the mid-'80s. Before that, it had been since the late 60s, and before that, it was Jackie Robinson. And, of course, that trade was voided. So that covers right there about 60-plus years of Dodgers-Giants trades in full. I just described all four of them. So it's not a frequent occurrence by any stretch of the imagination, but we know how well Farhan Zaidi knows the Dodgers players. They've got a good farm system, and they are, at this point in time in L.A., I don't know if I would use the word desperate to win a World Series, but they needed to basically spare no expense here because they've gotten so close in back-to-back years without tasting ultimate victory. So that, to me, is where the relievers for the Giants are good fits for the Dodgers. Smith is a really good fit. I think Tony Watson, of course, has been with the Dodgers before. He's a good fit as well. Maranta, Dyson, I think are both possibilities too. So I would say the likelihood of a Dodger Giant trade has probably never been higher than it is now in the last decade. I don't see Bumgarner going to LA, but I think all the relievers have to be in play as a possible Dodger-Giant trade is discussed.
John Morosi, our MLB insider, joining us on the Dialpad guest line. Yeah, the Dodgers are desperate, and they should be. They haven't won a World Series since 1988, and that suits is just fine here in the Bay, John. All right, I'm going to ask you this question, and I'm sure you've been asked this before, but the ball is the record number of home runs flying out of the park. We heard Justin Verlander's comments about the ball's juice, the relationship with Rawlings, etc. I ask you simply, John, do you feel like the ball is juice? And if it is, what would be wrong with Major League Baseball coming out and saying, yeah, we changed the ball because home runs are good for business? Like, what's the problem with that?
So here's how I look at it. The ball is different. I don't believe that MLB has specifically engineered and altered the ball for a grand design. I don't think that's the case, but I do think it's different. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing the home run totals as they are right now. I think that there are certainly some atmospheric conditions that are at work as well. There are some hitting philosophies at work here as well with the launch angle school of offense, if you will. But the changes to the ball are real. I don't think that MLB has done it by a deliberate effort. I really don't, especially because I think if they had, MLB could have very easily said, hey, listen, we took a look at the equipment and we saw some variance in the ball that we think is good for the sport, and we have worked to bring the ball into better specifications based on the way that the game is being played right now. That would be a totally defensible thing to say, totally legal, by the way, to say. And so the fact they haven't said it leads me to believe that there has been no deliberate effort on their part to change the ball. It can also be true that it's changed because there are basic, when you have a handmade product that has some variance to it, it can change from year to year without there being a deliberate effort for it to do so. That's how I look at it. I think the science behind it is undeniable. The ball has changed. I get it. I also take the MLB at their word that there has been no deliberate effort on their part, no grand design or schematic to make sure that it would occur the way that it has. So I think both those things can be true. I think both those things are true. And now it's just up to the pitchers to adapt a little bit and adjust to the new ball. I think we're seeing that certainly some pitchers have had a harder time shaping their breaking ball with this particular ball than we saw it in the past. I think now it's just up to everybody to adjust to it in the second half because I don't think, guys, that we're going to see the ball all of a sudden change back to what it was. This is the batch. You got to play with it, and I think it's up to the best pitchers in the world to adjust to the circumstances as they are right now.
John, what would you make of Bud Selig's book and kind of just his general feelings toward Barry Bonds? Because I found it to be just rife with contradiction.
Well, I will preface it by saying I have not read the full book, and as it relates to the Bonds situation. I think that Bud, I think as he's portraying it now publicly, certainly believes he did the best that he could during a very conflicted era for the game. I personally, and as I look towards remembering that chapter in the game's history, you know, Bud, obviously, being in the Hall of Fame, to me, I think puts into context the fact that it was a very flawed era, a very complicated era. And to me, the fact that Bud is there makes me very comfortable in my continued votes for Bonds for the Hall of Fame. I vote for Barry every year. I vote for Clemens every year.
Thank you.
This is all pre-testing in terms of the suspensions that existed in MLB. That all happened after Barry's career, or the bulk of it at least. Of course, he played through 2007. I believe that if you were suspended for steroid use, that I am not going to vote for you. That's been my policy so far. But for those players who were alleged to have used it before testing came into play with the actual suspensions, I believe that it's only fair to keep voting for those players because they're the best players of an inherently flawed era. And Bonds was never suspended, nor was Clemens. Therefore, I vote for them both every year. Doesn't make me feel great necessarily from an overall ethical standpoint. It's a complicated time, but I think that the way that the timing of everything was rolled out, you've got to just vote for the best players of a flawed era, which is how I feel the steroid era was. And then once you had testing come into play in 2005, you were then able to have greater clarity, and that's why I have not voted for Rafael Palmeiro. I have not voted for Manny Ramirez in this particular chapter of the game. So it's complicated, but if Selig's in, I see no issue with why Bonds and Clemens should not be in as well.
John, you're the best. That's why I love you, man. You keep it real. You keep it 100, as I like to say. You know, I got to ask you, John. You know, me and you, we always go back and forth, and I got to talk about the real sport. John, what's up with Michigan? What are you thinking this year, getting ready for the college
well,
ball?
Well, here's what I'll say, Lou. I think that Michigan having Shea Patterson back is huge. I was still a little confused as to the game plan, the way things went there in the game against Ohio State. But, of course, now it's different. Michigan's coaching staff has changed. Ohio State's coaching staff has changed. Michigan has a tough schedule this year, playing Notre Dame again in a non-conference game, but of course that game is in Ann Arbor as the game against Ohio State is as well. So the schedule is difficult, but it is manageable. That they've got to go to Wisconsin. They have to go to Penn State. There's a lot of difficult games to play, but you look at the way that this team is shaped up. Yes, they've lost a lot of experience on defense, but having an experienced quarterback back, I think, makes it probably one of their better overall situations they've had offensively with some coaching staff changes as well there on that side of the ball. So I think this is the year, guys, that Michigan finally makes it to the Big Ten title game for the first time. They've never made it before. Remarkable to say it, but it's true. They've never been there to Indy for the Big Ten championship game. But this, my friends, is the year.
All right. Thanks, John. The next time Jim Harbaugh wins a big game, it'll be the first time. We appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Well,
we'll talk to you.
He at least won the NFC title game with the Niners to get to the Super Bowl, did he not?
Yeah, I know. I'm being a little cheeky.
He's
but,
a hater, John.
I'm a hater. Thanks, John. Appreciate your time, man.
Thanks, guys. All right. Thank you.
John Morosi, our MLB insider. Hey, come on, man. Harbaugh, like, for as much money as that guy's making, for as much the rose petals we throw at his feet, like, it's time to deliver at Michigan, my dude. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
You're right.
I wanted to ask him, since he's not going to vote for anybody who's been suspended, is he going to vote for Alex Rodriguez? Because Alex Rodriguez is now the face of baseball. If we were to say who's the face of baseball, it's A-Rod. A-Rod is on every single broadcast. He's in the postgame. He's awesome. He's awesome on TV. Think of the role reversal between him and Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter was the beloved guy. Now Derek Jeter is hated as the Marlins CEO or president or whatever his title is. And A-Rod went from being ostracized by his own locker room to now, I mean, if we were to vote today, I think the majority of people would recognize him as the face of baseball over any of the current players.
Yeah, he's done a great job, you know, branding and being there and out there in front of everything. You might be right, but I think that Jeter still has low juice too.
Yeah, and this is still something that Major League Baseball is going to have to sift through for generations to come. And, you know, quite frankly, we talk so much about the ball being juiced. Let's be real. I still feel like there's a bunch of players that are juiced, and I feel like the players are still way ahead of the testing. I know Victor Conti had some comments recently about that very same thing. David Segui, who played in the majors for 15 years,
Expos,
you guys remember him, he said he thinks as many as 60% of guys today in Major League Baseball are taking juice.
Wow.
Of course,
wow.
The Deputy Commissioner, Dan Halem, said, quote, we have the most stringent and sophisticated program in the world, and more than ever, it's very hard to beat the system. We're confident that home run rates relate to two things. Two things, guys. Players trying to hit home runs with launch angle and analytics helping them, and that the ball is carrying better than it has last year, more similar to 2 years ago. We're pretty confident the increase of home runs does not involve PEDs. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner.
Right.
Now I'm going to be able to rest a lot easier tonight. Give me a break.
I know. But don't you guys find it quite fascinating when everyone talks about Barry Bonds and Sosa, McGuire, those home runs? If it's all that much juice, the ball's juice and the players are juice, why isn't anyone touching 73? Why isn't anyone doing it?
Because you have to have hand-eye coordination. You have to have a baseline of actual talent. I always said this forever. Like, Jose Canseco was a damn good player. Jose clearly took steroids. Why didn't he hit 800? Because he didn't have the baseline of talent that Bonds had, period. Yes, was Bonds on the juice? Probably. Everybody believes he was. I believe he was. But he was still a great player. He had 500 before he even touched a needle or the cream in the clear and all that stuff. You still have to have the batter eye to lay off the 3-2 slider, right? Come on.
All right. And by the way, Pete Rose was on these very airwaves yesterday. I know you spoke to him low, and that interview is over at 957thegame.com. I would definitely encourage you to check that out. Pete Rose weighed in on the PED use and how prevalent it is in baseball.
They saw how exciting people got watching Sosa and watching McGuire have that home run contest during the season. And all of a sudden, I don't think Barry Bonds took steroids until that happened. Because I think Barry said, well, I'll show you guys. In the next couple of years, he broke that record and later on hit 73 home runs or something like that. So they can say all they want about steroids and stuff like that, but I believe they turned their head to what was going on in the world of baseball.
I think a lot of people feel that way, including myself.
Yeah, but the other part that no one ever recognizes is that we went from these multi-purpose stadiums. All of the baseball stadiums were dual football baseball stadiums with larger dimensions. Don't get me wrong. Steroids was a huge part of it. But I'm also saying there's nuance. There's nuance. And part of the nuance is we built a ton of stadiums that were more fan-friendly and more hitter-friendly. Cincinnati, Atlanta. I mean, just go right down the list. All these. The new Yankee Stadium. I mean, it's a wedge shot with a golf club to get it down right field line. Judge.
Yeah, maybe a 7-iron for me, but I take a 3-quarter swing. I got a real problem squaring up the ball right now. Pete Rose, actually, on these very airwaves, weighed in on the notion of the ballparks being to blame. Here's what he said.
Before we start blaming the players about the balls, I mean, I can name you ballparks as a joke to pitch in. Houston's a joke to pitch in. Cincinnati, okay? Camden Yards, Philadelphia, Colorado, Arizona, the new ballpark in Atlanta. The ball flies out of there like it's a Little League ballpark. And that's what baseball wants, and that's what they're getting. So it's just a matter of time before they understand that they're not playing baseball today. They're playing long ball.
And that's it. And what I want to ask you guys, because the numbers tell the whole story. Do we really need all these home runs? Because when I was a kid, you may see a home run, you may not. It was special, right? If you saw a home run, you're like, damn, that was pretty cool. You know, McGuire just hit a 3-run bomb. Now, if I don't see 4 home runs, I didn't get my money's worth. And so it's been devalued on some level because it's not special anymore to see a home run. That's just what you see in the first inning of a baseball game now.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's where baseball's getting it wrong at, because they're trying to appease, we talked about it earlier, this generation that has the phones in their hand all the time. They need action right away, need to be stimulated. And you see everyone's playing these games. It's becoming a multi-million-dollar business that people rather go through sports in arenas and playing on PlayStation, all the different things they have. Esports is taking over. And they're trying to help these younger generation get more involved. And they think, okay, the home run, the long ball is going to bring them back to the park. The long ball ain't bringing them back to the park. It doesn't seem that it is working. So I don't know if that's the solution or the answers to what's going on.
Yeah, I don't think there is a solution other than absolutely ditching the old way of doing things. Like, if you brought in somebody who never seen a baseball game in their life, they would ask you, well, why does the American League have the DH and the NL doesn't? Why is there different rules? Why is each park's dimensions different, but we're obsessed with the numbers of the past?
Why aren't they allowed to have fun?
Yeah, well, that's that. I mean, there's so many questions that if you didn't watch the sport every day, you'd be like, well, why are they doing this? Why? I'm telling you, man, baseball, I love it. It's one of my favorite sports, and it's sad because it's completely... It's from a yesteryear era. It really is. And the game needs to be systematically changed. I would embrace regionality. We've talked about this on our show many times.
Butcher Shop, 6 to 10 week, 95.7
I've said this over and over again. If you're going to have a universal DH, that's going to make – you see the American League has won basically every All-Star game for 20 years. Why? Yeah. Because they can give aging veterans extra money and more years knowing that, hey, I could shift you to first base and I could shift you to the DH spot. So now you have the salaries that are higher in the American League versus the National League because you can go that extra mile to acquire a guy. Make it all a level playing field. Allow both leagues to have similar rules, DH all across the board, and let's switch up the divisions. I want a division where it's the Mariners, the Giants, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Angels, and the A's. Do what college football does. Embrace regionality. The best series last year for the Giants were the Oakland A's series because you got both fans from both fan bases coming into the ballparks and having fun. I don't need to see the Toronto Blue Jays.
No.
I don't need to see the Minnesota Twins. Ditch interleague. Let's realign the divisions. Go to like 120 games. Create a sense of urgency. And let's have more regionality. That's the way I would go.
I like it.
All right, good stuff. By the way, the Damon Bruce Show is giving you a chance to win $5,000. It's simple. Get the biggest celebrity you know to call the following number, 844-999-GAME, between the hours of 2 and 6 p.m. Contest will run all week. Biggest name of the day wins $1,000. Biggest name of the week wins $5,000. Again, the number to call is 844-999-GAME. All details at 957thegame.com. The celebrity call-in contest is presented by Dialpad. Dialpad, make smarter calls. All right.
Joe Lowandibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, just rolling along here on a Thursday, 9:32 in the a.m. Ryan Covey, Joe Shasky, Lorenzo Neal, and Akagarakis having a lot of fun. Butch and I will be back tomorrow and getting to stretch out with Lorenzo Neal a bit, which has definitely been a lot of fun because we get to talk some football, which is coming before you know it. Training camp, just a couple of weeks away, so we figured it'd be a great time to reach out to Ian Williams, of course, former 49er and current analyst. All right, let me start here with Ian, and I appreciate you coming on this morning. And by the way, Ian, like all guests, join us on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls, connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video, messages, and meetings across your existing devices. Let me ask you this, Ian. ESPN put together a list of top 10 make or break candidates. They had Solomon Thomas on that list. We know it's year three for Solly. We know he's had a ton of stuff happen in his private life. The talent is there. I think there's other pieces on that D-line. If I'm buying stock in a player right now, I think it might have to be Solomon Thomas. This is obviously a make or break year for him, to put it mildly, but I also think there's still plenty of talent there. What's Solomon Thomas's ceiling for you, Ian?
Well, obviously his ceiling is high because he got drafted early in the first round a couple of years ago. So he has the talent, he has the measurables to be a dominant player on a daily down basis for the 49ers, especially in this new defense that they're transitioning to and then having all these interior guys. So now he's not, you know, somewhat out of position playing defensive end, trying to be a rusher. And now he can be a mismatch on the inside against a guard or a center on second, third, and passing downs. To kind of, you know, get that, generate that pressure up the middle. But I feel like, just like you alluded before, you know, he's had off-the-field issues that he's had to deal with personally that many people, you know, wouldn't even be able to get over or be able to, you know, go out there and be able to focus on the game dealing with what he was dealing with. So that night he's done that, and he's worked his butt off this season. I've kind of kept in touch with him, watching his Instagram and stuff like that, you know, seeing his workout videos, seeing what other guys are doing that he's that he's with. I feel like this is a breakout season for him. And yes, this is year three. This is a big year for him because I know going into year four, he's going to want a contract extension sometime soon, you know, if he does ball out this year or next year. So This is like you said, it's a very big year for him.
And with other guys that they brought in on the defensive line, you look at Nicky Bosa, hopefully he'll sign, and you look what he can bring on the edge. You went out to Kansas City, brought in other pass rushers. How much, in Armstead as well here, how much would that help his success? Because now you're talking about the double teams and, of course, Forrest Buckner, what he brings to the table. And when you watch him, when you're watching Solomon, how much would that help him? And if there was a tip or there's something you see, him being interior, what is something that you feel that he can work on and can grow to get better?
Lo, what's good?
It's all you, baby. It's all you.
I already know it's you because you only person that called Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa, you're the only person.
Nicky, baby.
I know what they call him. Nicky, baby. No, with Nick, so I'm interested to see how he transitions into the NFL. You know, he's coming off his two groin injuries. It's going to take him a couple of weeks to kind of get into the lock and step of going against the NFL offensive line. I think he'll transition well. And then you got D Ford on the other side, who was brought in off of free agency. But they have this, like you said, a collection of talent: Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas. They have five first-round draft picks who can kind of take over a game damn near, by themselves. But now they have five guys. Now they have a rotation of guys that can go out there on any down and wreak havoc either in the run or in the pass game. And, Solomon Thomas, talking about him, and I said this a little bit before, now that they have all these guys, now they're not having to play, a la DeForest Buckner, 95% of the snaps for a game. And now in the third and fourth quarters, when the game's starting to be more defined and the game is, all right, guys, we need you guys to, close the game out. We're up two touchdowns or a touchdown, or we need the ball back. We need to go out there and stop the run. We need you to stop the pass. We need you to go out there and get some sacks and wreak some havoc in the backfield so we can get the ball back, or vice versa, we can hold on to the ball. So now that they have this collection of talent now, they have a great rotation. You guys are not going to get tired. You're going to see more push, more fight, more grit in the third and fourth quarters. That's really going to help propel this defense, because this defense is where it's going to be at. The offense, you have Jimmy G, you have a potent offense over there, but at the end of the day, defense wins championships.
You know, Ian, you brought up Jimmy G, and when we're talking about some of the make or break players for this season, I feel like Jimmy G is front and center. If you were playing on his team over the next couple of weeks during training camp and leading into the preseason, I mean, what are you looking for to know that, yeah, Jimmy's the dude and he's going to take us to the playoffs?
Well, all you have to do is look at the film. You know, when he was with New England, he had that breakout, game stretch where he was able to, show the league what he can do. And that's why he got brought over here, because he was shown on film what he can do. And then, if you go back a lot, I watched back the Detroit Lions game last night, just how well he was moving around, how well he was delivering the ball, and the type of demands that's going to be asked of him in a Kyle Shanahan offense with the long stretch runs, the play action. The biggest mental hurdle for him, I watched him a few weeks ago when I went out there for OTAs just to see how he's moving, see his mobility and stuff like that. He has his brace on, so it's going to be a little different for him mentally to be able to get over, having people, falling, near his legs. It's him escaping the pocket. But the biggest hurdle for him is when there's a long play-action play, and now low, these quarterbacks, they got to turn their heads, to kind of sell the play fake to the running back.
Sure.
Then they got to snap their head around and they got to read a defense or see, who's coming at them. So now with him, being not what he used to be, with the ACL and having that in the back of his head, that's going to be the biggest hurdle for him, going into the season. And yes, everybody's healthy, for the most part. We haven't had this in a while. We lost McKinnon right before the season. We lost Marquise for a good portion of the start of the season. So, now we have a whole team that's healthy. Richard Sherman was coming off his Achilles. So, there's pretty much no excuses. Kwon Alexander's going to be back healthy once training camp starts. Jason Verrett, all these guys, we have a healthy team right now. So, Jimmy G, he has to lead these guys into the promised land.
Talking to Ian Williams here on 95.7 The Game, our 95.7 The Game NFL analyst, and he joins us on the Dial Pad guest line. Let me ask you this, Ian. In a perfect world, Who leads the 49ers wide receivers in receptions and yards this year?
Does it have to be a receiver? Can it be
Well, no, that's why I'm throwing Kittle out, because it's George Kittle. But as far as the wide receiver core, because the reason
he got you.
Well, because the reason I ask is, you know, I think a lot of teams would prefer to have a true number one wide receiver. Don't know that the 49ers necessarily have that right now, but there's some talent in that room, more talent than we've seen in a few years. So who needs to be that lead dog in that wideout room this year for you?
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, who really comes out of training camp and who kind of sets themselves apart to be that number one, number two guy. You know, Dante Pettis did a really good job last season, towards the end of the season, to really show what he can do and to show that he can possibly handle the stress of being a number one receiver. But obviously he didn't do enough, because what did the 49ers do in the draft this past year? They draft in the second round Deebo Samuel and then Jalen Hurd in the third round. You know, kind of a hybrid guy, and then a guy in Deebo who can kind of go get the ball and maybe be that number one guy for them. So there's a lot of talent in this room, but there's a lot of question marks in the room. Kendrick Bourne, what is he going to be able to do with another year? Trent Taylor, what a big question mark right there. He's a smaller guy, slot guy, but can he get open? Can he, you know, they brought in Wes Welker to kind of, you know, mentor these guys, and it's kind of the best guy for Trent Taylor to kind of learn under during the offseason. So, you know, who's going to, you know, emerge and be that dominant guy? Jordan Matthews, they brought in for off of free agency. Is he a camp body, or is he a guy that Jimmy G and Kyle Shanahan can, you know, learn to trust and him be, you know, a pretty good player? When he was with Philadelphia, he had a lot of good plays where, you know, he was behind Alshon Jeffrey and a host of other good receivers up there, so he never got the playing time that he did up there. Maybe he gets that down here in San Francisco, and maybe he can shine with it. But, you know, it all generates off of what George Pittis can do this season. If he can, you know, kind of revert back to what he did last year, it's going to help these young receivers kind of grow into and not have to, you know, take on the burden of, you know, being that number one or having, you know, 5 to 10 to 15, you know, targets a game or something like that. So it's a great problem to have a lot of talent, but it's also a bad problem to have a lot of question marks on that talent.
Yeah, another spot where there's a lot of question marks would be the secondary. I mean, is Okello going to start opposite Richard Sherman? What the heck are they going to do with those safeties? Is it going to be Tart? And hopefully Adrian Colbert takes a step back, forward from his step back last year. Like, what are they going to do with the safety position? Because to me, that's the biggest area of question marks heading into training camp.
Yeah, so you bring back Jimmy Ward on his final year in deal. You got Jaquaski coming back. You got Adrian Colbert coming back. And then you have Marcel. And you have a couple of those young safeties that got some playing time towards the end of the season last year who got better as the games went on. So you're going to have a lot of competition back there. You know, the whole saying, you know, Lorenzo iron sharpens iron.
No question.
Yeah, so, you know, that competition, I feel like it's really going to help, you know, this young secondary. And then having a guy like Richard Sherman and then have a guy like Jason Verrett come in, you know, at the two cornerback spots to kind of help push Akello. I'm like, all right, Akello, you're going into another year, another season, bro. We're expecting more out of you. We drafted you because you have a 6'3 frame. We drafted you to be like Richard Sherman. Now you have Richard Sherman on the team. Learn from him, and we want you to be exactly what he was when he was up in Seattle. If you can't, we got a guy in free agency, Jason Verrett, who's done it at a high level for a few years. He's had some injuries, but if he can kind of go back to what he was doing before on the field, then, you know, Richard Sherman and Jason Verrett are going to be two dominant corners, you know, that is going to help just another be another aspect of a dominating young defense who can go out there and stop any type of opposing offense and give OCs headaches and nightmares the day before a game. But just like this competition, you know, training camp, who comes out, who shows what they can do when the pads come on. You know, everybody looks good in shorts and jerseys
no
and helmets.
Question.
Everybody looks good. It's when you can put those pads on, Lo, you know this, when you put those pads on, that's where you know guys are for real or you know guys aren't for real. So, you know, it's going to be the last man standing when it comes out to training camp, and then those are the guys you're going to see who are going to start to take that next step into the 2019 season.
Good stuff. Ian Williams, our 95.7 The Game NFL analyst. Appreciate your time, man. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
For sure, man. Thanks for having me on. Lo, right. I'll let you.
For sure, bro.
All right, there he is, Ian Williams. I got to be honest, I'm worried about the secondary this year. I mean,
you think?
Yeah, Jason Verrett. Yeah, there's a hot take for you, Butch. Secondary's got a lot of question marks.
And the wide receiver room.
Yeah, well, the wide receiver room, there's more talent in there. The secondary, the durability issues for all these guys. And what, Jason Verrett's magically going to show up and be the solution? Guy's missed way more football than he's ever played in his career. Yeah. I want to ask you about Akilo, Lo. Here's, you have to have a short memory as a corner in the NFL. It's just part of the deal, especially in the modern NFL where the NFL wants 48-45 every damn game. But I feel like he was a guy that would wear his deficiencies like right around his neck, right? He'd give up a bad play, and then he'd be trigger shy the rest of the game, and he would resort to poor form and, you know, put his hands on guys and trying to jam them, and he'd get burnt long. To me, I don't see a starting level corner in Akilah Witherspoon for a team with playoff aspirations. I don't think that's who he is.
Yeah, I think Jason Verrett's going to end up taking that corner spot.
If he can stay on the field.
What he did in L.A., San Diego, the guy, he can play when he's healthy. When he's well, he's hell. I look at Akilah Witherspoon, at times you're absolutely right. He didn't trust his technique.
Right.
See what happens, you line up on a guy, and you know you want to take away, you know, you look at the stem, where they're at. Receivers will tell you their routes by alignment and assignment. If it's outside edge of the numbers, outside name of the hash, he's not running a speed out. He's not running a speed three. He's not running a 15-yard comeback because the sideline is your friend. So guys don't understand. It's attention to detail, especially when you're talking about the corner position. So by alignment, you're going to know pretty much the assignment. You take away three routes just knowing if he's lined up out wide, outside the hat, you know he can't run a speed three to break to the outside. He can't run a five-yard comeback.
He's got no room.
He's got no room, coach. So guys got to be lined up to understand the nuances of the game. And too many guys expect on athletic ability, and then once they get beat, now they're like deer in the headlights. And you saw that with the killer, like you're talking about. Start holding, start grabbing, because he wasn't trusting his technique. Your feet and your hands will take you there. If you can line up right and do those things, you're going to be fine. I don't have that. I'm not as nervous as you guys are about the secondary.
I'm
those boys up front, Butcher Boy.
Well, they're gotta be better.
They are going to save their lives.
They have to be, though,
Lo. The defensive line up front, because you got two pass rushers and you got that boy dog and Forrest Buckner in the middle, quarterbacks aren't going to have time. You're going to see teams trying to screen this team, going to run draw, going to run a lot of draws. Because of the fact you don't have time. You ain't going to see a lot of seven-step drop, coach. You're just not going to see it.
Well, they did it all last year. I mean, Jared Goff stood in that pocket like he was Statue of Liberty.
There was one guy.
I know, Cassius Marsh, and he's garbage. He's not that good at all. I mean, let's be honest. I felt bad for O'Kelly. He got picked on all year long. I mean, they barely threw at Richard Sherman. Quarterbacks didn't even look to the left.
They didn't have to.
They didn't look at him. But the other part is complimentary football. They had no pass rush, so it's hard to guard anybody in the NFL for seven-step drops. And then the other part is I didn't think he had any help over the top with safeties. So he was in a really crummy situation where he had to play the deep ball, and then you're leaving the outs and the underneaths just wide open because you have no help over the top.
You're right, and that's why the defensive front, to me, is going to be game-changing, because now you can squat and you can sit on a lot of routes. Now you're sitting back and playing cover two, and you can disguise it and saying, okay, we're going to play four. All of a sudden, right before the snap, you jump back, and now you got four across. You can do a lot of different things because just pass rush. Now you got to fill those holes. You got to make sure your linebackers are getting the proper drop. But now, if you can put that pressure on those guys up front, your secondary will be a lot better.
Yeah, and time for Robert Saleh to show us what he's got. Now we gave him some ingredients. Time to cook us up a good meal.
Absolutely.
By the way, let's take a few minutes here to take our poll question of the day, brought to you by FH Daily Chevrolet in Novato, as we go to Anna. Anna, what do you got for us today?
All right, so today's Take Your Pick poll question on the website is this a make-or-break season for 49ers Jimmy Garoppolo?
I mean, this is a 100, 1,000, 1 million percent yes. Like, obviously, they have a $15 million out clause on March 1st of next year. The guy's played, I think, a grand total of 8 or 9 games as a starter. We have no clue if he can stay healthy. Was it a mirage the final 6 games of the year prior? I don't know. He looked tentative. I know Ian said he went back and looked at the film. I've looked at every single game, two and three times over. And I'm telling you, the guy in the first three games last year was tentative.
He was
holding on to the ball. He was patting the ball like Ben Roethlisberger. I want to get rid of it, but nah. He was processing instead of just playing. And I want to see Kyle gear the offense toward him and allow him to play more up-tempo. He's better in the up-tempo because he's not thinking. He's just playing and reacting. For some reason, he was trying to process way too much last year, trying to make the perfect play. Just go out and make plays.
You're right. Last year was that year he got paid, so then he wanted to prove it.
Right.
And so the year before, he was like, I'm playing foot-free, fancy-free because of the fact I want to get paid. And now he got it. Now he's saying, now let me show everyone I got paid. Let me show that I'm worth it. And he put a little pressure on himself. But we'd be remiss if we didn't say who we started off with. Minnesota, Purple People Eaters, you win them against one of the better defensive fronts up front.
I agree.
And they
weren't a playoff team last year.
And they were
but
knocking,
they were really good.
They weren't a playoff team last year.
But I'm not saying they're a playoff team. Let's be fair and balanced.
Right.
But those guys up front could get after it. Their front four could get after, and you saw him throwing off his back feet. They made him uncomfortable early in the
season.
That's
life in the NFL.
But first game of the year, they had put so much stock into the McKinnon Goodwin baskets, and I said that's disproportionate to reality. Goodwin got hurt immediately.
I think
fifth play of the game, and obviously McKinnon was out for the entire year. You're starting Dante Pettis, a rookie who barely got any reps in preseason, as your starting wide receiver up in Minnesota against that defense. Like that defense, that's the one thing that coach does well.
Yeah, Ryan,
is defense. He cut his chops.
Ryan, you've been a little hard on him.
Hold on.
He didn't have his starting receiver, Ryan.
Look, that's just me as a Bears fan being happy that the Bears kept him out of the playoff in a game that meant nothing to the Bears in Week 17. That's all. I just can't stand the Vikings. You're right. That's a tough place to play in, without question. They had a lot of things working against him in that game.
They should have lost that game. I mean, Jimmy took a terrible... He held onto the ball. He waited to throw across the field late into the flat, which is a no-no. You do not throw late into the flat. It should have been a pick six.
That's a Joey Harrington throw.
They should have lost that game.
But guys, we've seen Drew Brees do it.
We've seen
Tom Brady do it. You guys are judging the guy. Look, I'm not necessarily. I think they overpaid him.
What is he?
He's a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but give the guy some time. This is only going to be his second year as a true starter.
But he's 27, 28.
Look at Carr. We fell off the mountain. We wanted to anoint him MVP. And he's got a running game now this year. The running game is going to be critical for this San Francisco 49ers. He's got a better defense. They had to score at an eclipse. He only played, four games last year?
Three
games. So, guys, pump the brakes. Let's see how it works out.
What's the breaking point for Jimmy this year? Does he need to reach at least 500? Yeah, exactly. What's the threshold for him?
They're going to go 7-9, and they're going to leave everyone disappointed.
How much you want to bet?
Okay, let's bet. Golf around.
Let's do it.
Get me into one of these private clubs that you get to play.
We're name dropping all morning. Yeah. Now let's actually see it on a golf course.
I'll take you guys to Olympic Club if they don't win.
Beautiful. There we go.
Let me get in on that.
They'll win seven. Yes, they'll win in seven games.
All right.
They're going to come back here. Hey, listen.
Late course, right?
They're going to come back here, anywhere you want.
Okay.
Pebble Beach. Let's go. They're winning seven.
Woo! Uncle Lowe's
winning seven. Listen, I'm telling you, at the worst, they come home at 2-3. At worst, I think the first three games, this team at worst, in the first three games, they're 2-1.
They got to prove it to me.
They got
to
go.
They're going to beat Tampa.
Hold on.
They're going to beat the second.
The Bengals?
Cincinnati. They got Tampa and Cincinnati. And then they play the Steelers. They're going to be – they have a chance. They're more close to being 3-0. They're not going to be 0-3.
Over under seven wins? Is that the number?
Yeah.
So you're saying over. I'm saying 7-9.
All right. And by the way, the 49ers traveling back to the East Coast the last couple of years, I don't think they've won since, I think, the Nixon administration. So that's not exactly.
Are you getting in on this or what? Are you just going to sit here and just take your little butcher boys?
I just want to get a free round of golf, though. That's all I'm trying to do. Whatever's going to get me at the Olympic Club, man. Whatever the right answer is for that.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll get Ian Williams out there, too.
Oh, yeah. We'll do that.
Butcher just wants everybody to take him golfing.
I do.
I want to go. I'll take you guys out to Franklin Canyon. Really nice track out there.
Are you going to buy me a salmon salad for $40?
She's trying to take mom out to lunch yesterday. It was ridiculous.
Is that a sushi salmon salad?
Man, I went to this joint out in Alamo. I'm like, hey, mom, let me buy you lunch. $23 for a salmon salad.
Salad.
Are you crazy? All right, we got to get out of here. All right.
They want us to run the next hour. They just get to a news flash.
Wait, one more hour? All right, it's Dickinson and Guru, JD and Goo warming up in the other room. Butch, thank you very much. Lo, Steve on the other side of the glass. Appreciate all of you guys. Thanks to John Curley. Anna, lovely to see you as always. Joe and I will be back tomorrow with Lo. In the meantime, just be good to each other.
Coming up today on- the game. Vontae Steiny and Guru review free agency with our Warriors insider, Mark Spears, at 11.
This is a new team, and it's a new era like a baseball hat.
And the guys get ready for training camp with former 49er Dante Whitner at 12:30. On the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7. The game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.